Hello everyone, welcome to this Office 365 Patterns and Practices webcast. Today we're going to talk about how you can build timer jobs using the add-in model. So for the people that have a long SharePoint history, you definitely do know SharePoint server-side timer jobs. Now, similar functionalities, similar capabilities are also needed when you use the SharePoint add-in model, and that's the topic of today. My name is Bert Jansen. I'm a service engineer in the SharePoint and OneDrive service engineering group, and I'm working a lot with customers to help them transform from their current full trust solutions environment into the SharePoint add-in model world. With me, I have Vesa Juvonen.
Yep. Hello. My name is Vesa Juvonen, and I'm a senior program manager in Office 365 as well, and working with the customers on the adding model transformation topics, among the other things as well.
All right. Thank you, Vesa. Let's first show a couple of slides, kind of setting the scene, and then later on we will conclude with a demo. So I first want to introduce you in the why. Why do you need a remote background job running against the SharePoint online or even against the SharePoint on-premises? Because this also applies to SharePoint on-premises. So what are typical reasons? And we see a number of main buckets of reasons. So one is governance. So let me give you a couple of examples. I think that will explain this better. For example, suppose you have a company policy that for each and every site collection, you need to have two site collection administrators. And during site collection provisioning, you can enforce that. So your users go to your site collection provisioning solution, which by the way, we have very nice samples on PNP. And in the UI, you enforce that they have to pick two admins. All good. Now, you have those users that say like, okay, let's try, let's experiment. What happens if I remove the second admin? And that's something very hard to enforce inside the current SharePoint pages. So if they're admin, they can simply do that and they remove the second admin and you only have one. Now, such a thing is something that you want to intercept, and there a timer job is the ideal solution, because you can have a remote timer job that runs across your site collections overnight and checks, do I have two admins? Okay, this one is good. All right, this one only has one admin. Let's flag it. Let's push some actions to the user to fix this. Right, so that's one category.
One of the things actually, Bert, on that one of the really good examples that I ran into quite recently within the Microsoft MSIT hosted environment was that I got a link to a site and then I didn't have a permissions to that site. And then I filled out the form for requesting permissions, which is typical SharePoint capability. And then I got an email with saying, well, your email sent to this person was not successful because the person doesn't exist. So the contact information for that site was, well, the person to contact the request permission was not up to date, or it was a person's contact email which didn't exist no longer in Microsoft address book. And that would be a really typical governance task to do, double check that the contact information is accordingly or correct in the site request page.
Absolutely. And that kind of needless brings me to the maintenance tasks, because that one is kind of in between governance maintenance, depending on how you look at things. But to give you a maintenance example, for example, you built your team site V1, hopefully with our provisioning engine, but other solutions, of course, as good as well. But you have a V1 of your team site and you have, let's say, 500 site collections created using that particular V1. What if you now go to V2? Like in your V2 team site, you're adding a new library. So all those new team sites created with the new V2 team site template, they're okay. But you have those 500 old ones. For that, you can build a simple timer job that iterates over site collections, that checks in the property bag of the site, like, okay, this is version one. Oh, then I'm going to apply the changes and use the provisioning framework to apply a change that brings along the second library and mark the site as being V2. So this kind of task is also something that you can use as a background task. And then a third main category is more as a fallback scenario for remote event receivers. So remote event receivers are working similar to event receivers in the SharePoint Full Trust world, but there are differences. So what happens when a SharePoint fires a remote event receiver? It actually will call into a service that you are hosting. Now, calling a service endpoint over the internet might fail due to numerous reasons. Might be networking issue, your service might be down for maintenance. Though many reasons why that eventually could fail. Now, SharePoint will only try once. So if that for some reason failed, that event didn't fire, that code didn't run. Now imagine having a timer job that checks your libraries that you have remote event receivers on and verifies, like, did that logic of that remote event receiver run? If not, I'm going to run it anyway from the timer job just to catch up on things that I missed. That's a common pattern that we see more and more appearing.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes a lot of sense. And that's actually a really good point. So this is not necessarily just about the scheduling. Well, that really comes down on the example what you mentioned in the maintenance tasks. For example, just running an upgrade for all of the existing sites. So the solution what you're going to share is actually bringing value for that one as well.
I think it's just a way to, it's a very flexible concept, remote timer job. You can, any logic that you want to run in a scheduled way across one or more site collections is a candidate for this. Now, what's the typical properties of a remote, let's call it remote timer job to stay into the timer job analogy that we have from the Full Trust world. It's a typically a console application, so a .exe program that runs outside of SharePoint. You have to host it somewhere, and that's using client-side APIs to talk to SharePoint, because since you're running outside of SharePoint, client-side APIs is the only way to do that. Very often we see that those jobs use app-only credentials. It's not necessarily needed to use app-only. You can also use username and password, but since this is kind of a background task running unattended, it makes sense to use app-only, because using one advantage of using app only is that you can give your you can give tenant permissions to the app that you're using, and at that point the app and your timer job as such can get to all the data of all the site collections which you need to do some maintenance tasks or governance tasks. If you use a username password combination, you still have to ensure that that user and password, so that, that account does have the proper permissions. Otherwise, you get access denied errors.
Yeah, that would be kind of a scary thing to share. No offense for the developers, but share a tenant administrative account for the developers. That really doesn't necessarily sound right.
Right, and it's a maintenance burden because you have to ensure that that account is site collection administrator on all the sites. Otherwise, it doesn't work because there is no web application policies anymore in SharePoint Online.
Yeah.
So good, that's
point.
Why the recommended way is app only. That console application is triggered, so you need to think about scheduling. I'm going to talk about that pretty soon. It has a scope, so your timer job runs can run against one particular site. So it might be that you need to just do something for one particular site and have that running each night. It can be for a subset of sites, or it can be across all site collections, including all subsites of your complete environment. So depending on what you need, you have to define a scope. It has to be throttling safe. I'm not sure if that's the right English word. It's my interpretation. But you will have one client doing a lot of calls to SharePoint. You know, SharePoint Online has throttling in place. So you need to be careful if you're throttled, that you kind of back off on hitting SharePoint, wait a while, and then start hitting again. And for that, the PNP core framework does have an execute client retry method. sorry, execute query retry, is that correct, Sessa? Execute query retry, yeah, method that you can use that has built-in throttling.
So as a developer, you just call that method, and that's then automatically throttling or backing off gradually if needed.
Yeah. You don't, as a developer, you don't really have to worry about the throttling at that point. If you use the regular execute query, then it's your task to deal with throttling. So I would recommend using the PNP version, the version in the PNP call library, to be correct. About hosting, so. You have your timer job, you have you develop that in your development environment, you test it, okay, everything is fine, but now you need to host it. What we see is that there are two main, let's call it flavors. If you go to Windows Azure, Azure Web Jobs is the ideal way to host these timer jobs, because it's a very modern, easy to use platform. It has integrated logging and so on, but very important, it also has a scheduling option. So you can deploy the job to Windows Azure and you can define a schedule. So at that point, Azure will kick off your job on your on the defined schedule for you, which is what you need. If you go to on-premises, you can, hosting is kind of maybe simpler. You just copy the exe to a Windows box, a Windows server, and that doesn't have to be a SharePoint server. It can be any server in your environment. Typically, you would even pick a server outside of the SharePoint farm. But then you need to think about scheduling. So, and what we commonly recommend to customers is using the Windows Task Scheduler, which is a scheduling service available in Windows, where you can then schedule the execution of that particular application. One little caveat there is that the Windows Server Task Scheduler is not really meant to schedule like things each 30 seconds or each minute. It's more meant like schedule something each 1 hour or each day. So if you need a very fine-grained schedule with very small intervals, this is not really the right way.
But then the alternative would be absolutely to write a own Windows service, which is then having the scheduling and the settings, and then you would be able to monitor that Windows service, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So if you build your own Windows service, you can you can make it fine-grained and fire like very like each 15 seconds fire a small task and watch that and do all of that. Yes, but it requires a bit more development work, of course.
Absolutely.
The rest of the Windows Task Scheduler is for free. It's a matter of just creating a scheduled task. And even that can be automated to automate deployment and so on.
Yeah. Maybe we should actually build a sample for the BNP for the Windows service.
Yeah. So it's an open ask. Anyone interested? Yes. Maybe we're in for a nice sample for this one. Which brings me to BNP as well. Talked about BNP. So. We talked about the how does the timer job look like, how to implement it. Now, you can start from scratch and build on your own, which is fine. But there is a better way. In the PNP core framework, we have a timer job framework that you can use to start from. So, and the timer job framework will give you a lot of additional capabilities, a lot of plumbing code, I would say, that you otherwise would have to build on your own. So, and this slide is listing some of the main components of the timer job framework. One is authentication. So using either app only or using a password from on-prem against online, it's just a matter of picking the right method and just providing the right data. And we'll show a bit more of this in the demo. I'll show some of the code, but it makes it very easy to use. Another common request is I need to define the sites to operate on. So you might want to run a particular timer job against all your team sites, which are in a particular web application. So with the timer job framework, you can use wildcard URLs to have the timer job framework select at runtime the actual sites. So we go out and grab the sites you need. based on the wildcard URL. You can say like tenant.sharepoint.com/sites/team*, and then all the sites that match to this particular URL are fed into your timer job. It also offers a sub-site level expansion, so you can run the timer job against a site collection, but also against a sub-site or all sub-sites. So the timer job framework will help you grab all sub-sites and run your job against all the sub-sites if you would like to do it. Another important one is multi-threading. So when you hear me talking about running a job against all site collections or all webs, potentially that it can mean thousands and thousands of webs. You can run this in a sequential fashion, but it will take a long time. So we've done some measurement and some testing with multi-threading, and we built that actually into the framework. So by default, it is multi-threaded, and it will kick off 5 threads and divide the work against 5 threads. You can change the threading to have more threads, less thread, or you can even disable the threading. But the point is that the performance really rises if you go multi-threaded.
So and on that one, Bert, actually, just out of curiosity, that the CSUM itself isn't really multi-threaded safe, right?
No. So the CSUM itself is not really multi-threaded, so you need to deal with it carefully to make it work in a multi-threaded way. But it is supported and it can work, yeah. And it has been implemented in the time measure framework. So if you need multi-threading, really don't try this at home. Just grab this and start from there, I would say.
Or have a look on the code, how it's implemented in
oh,
the
have a look at the, of course, yes. That's what I meant. Yeah. Another common task in time job is like it needs to have some state. So suppose we have that that job that checks for the site collection admins that I talked about before. If that job requires a particular JavaScript file to be present in the site, to show the end user a message when something is wrong. The job can always upload that particular file each time again and again and again. It is way better to just check like, okay, do we already have everything in place? And I can do the check by grabbing a property from the web property bag and see if it's okay, it's in place, then I can skip parts of my job. So often you see that jobs want to store their state into the site so that for the next run they can really say like, okay, the previous run went okay, we are at this version, these were the results from the previous run, and based on that your timer job can have a smart logic that only executes the parts which are really really needed just to optimize performance again. Using the time measure framework is pretty easy. I'm going to show you that in the upcoming demo. As a matter of, it's actually a base class. So you create a class inheriting from our time measure base class, and off you go. And finally, obvious of course, but the PNP Core library also offers logging, and time measure framework can then also uses logging as such. So you get a very detailed logging of all the activities that go on, which is important since it's running in background. If something goes wrong, without proper logging, it's very hard to troubleshoot and to diagnose what went wrong.
Sounds really good. So all of these are kind of a built-in available for the developers as long as they start using the PMP time job framework, which is open source as well.
Yes, so that's indeed true. These are all capabilities of the PMP time job framework. They can use it as is and just create a solution at our PNP NuGet package, which pulls down our core library, which includes the time measure framework, and amongst other things also includes our site provisioning framework. There's one way to use it, and the recommended way to use it, I would say. But if you want to just leverage the code, you can definitely also grab the code, make changes and make it your own, and use it in your own projects as well. That's definitely possible. This slide gives you some references. So we have a pretty good documentation about the time measure framework, explaining all the different components, the ones that I touched upon in more detail, with code samples and with all the detailed steps and instructions. And there are then two solutions with samples. So we have a core.timerjobs.samples project containing 11 timer jobs, each showing a particular capability of the timer job framework. So in the demo, we're going to explain a few of those. We also have governance.timerjobs, which is part of a bigger governance implementation. So where we worked with Microsoft IT to bring their governance, SharePoint online governance implementation to PnP. And a part of the governance implementation of Microsoft is running timer jobs. It's running jobs that check sites. So the example about the two site collection administrators, that's a real life example coming from inside Microsoft. So now this governance.timerjobs solution contains several timer jobs really coming from the MSIT side, from internal Microsoft, for you to leverage. And they all use our timer job framework, which is pretty cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. So really MSIT is also using all of this stuff as well.
Yep. The MSIT timer jobs are based on our timer job framework. All right, with that being said, let's jump into a demo. Let's get my Visual Studio open. So this project that I have open here is coming from PnP. It's in the PnP repository under the solutions folder, and it's named core timerjobs.sample. It has those 11 individual timer jobs. And then for this demo, I'm going to initially start with explaining you a basic structure, a very simple job. And what better name for a simple job as simplejob.cs? So let's slightly zoom into this one. So this class is a timer job. This is just the job. It's not talking about the exe that runs the job. This is the actual job logic. Now, how do you create that? You create a class which inherits from timer job. Timer job is a base class in the PnP core library. When you then instantiate this class, you use a constructor. You can specify a name for your job, and you need to specify a timer job run event handler. I think this, and this is the main part. So you connect the timer job run event handler. So when then later on this job is run, and it is run against 50 site collections, this event, this timer job run event, will fire for each site collection. And then you, when it fires, you end up in this place where you would add your timer job logic. If it's a multi-threaded way, we just fire those events from different threads. So you don't have to worry about the multi-threading. You just write your code here. Whether a single-threaded, multi-threaded, it will just fire and run this code for you. So then we come into this event handler implementation. What's interesting here is this timer job run event arguments, because it will give you like a web client context. So you don't need to think about grabbing a context. You just grab it from the past, the timer job run events arguments, and off you go. Now, this is a very simple example, just showing grabbing the title of the web and displaying the title. But you can imagine that you can build a more complex logic in this event handler. Now, this job needs to be wrapped in a .exe, because we said like a timer job is typically a console.exe application that you schedule somewhere, either on Azure using Azure Web Jobs or on premises using the Windows Task Scheduler. So we have a program.cs, which is typical in a console application. So here we have our main methods. We instantiate the job. Then we provide its authentication information. In this case, the simple job is using a username password. But you can also use app only here. But somewhere you need to provide that initial input. Typically, that input then is stored in your app.conf. For password, you would also encrypt it in app.conf if you would do it like this. But you need to provide the job with the credentials to use to run against SharePoint, because it's running in an unattended fashion, right? Then we add a scope to the job. So here we are adding one site. So this job will run against one site. Now I could also add here like https://bertonline.sharepoint.com/site/*. At that point, the same job would run against all my site collections. So you can really define the scope. You can do multiple individual add sites. So you can add five sites, just calling add site five times with different sites. But the point is that you add the site collections that you have to operate against. And then you run the job. Now, running of the job is actually very simple, but it's wrapped in this additional method over here. But running the job kind of comes down to job.run, right? So overall, relatively simple process to create a timer job. Now let's move to a real world example and do a little demo of that, meaning actually run something instead of talking about the code. So in here we have this core.timerjobs.samples.governance job. And this is actually the implementation of the sample I gave in the beginning of this webcast. This implementation will check like how many admins do we have. If I have less than two admins, I will inform the user to take action. If I have two admins or more, the site is compliant and the potential warning will be removed. But it's easier to just show it and explain the code.
Isn't this something what the MSIT is actually doing as well, automatically, as an example? So this is really real world.
Yeah, so MSD is not using this code as such, but they're doing a very similar implementation. That's correct, Vesa. So let's take the job. Let's simply run through the job and put a breakpoint and step to the code and then see how things turn out. So I'm going to open a program.cs as well. I'll close this one just to show you guys that this one is using app only, so it requires a client ID and client secret. For demo purposes, the client ID is already in the app config file, but for obvious reasons I didn't store my client secret here or my password. Right, so this demo application is going to ask that upfront. In reality, you would put that information over there so the timer job can run fully unattended. And then we'll run against one site, so the dev site. So let's hit F5, it will run, and it will start asking some information. So it's asking me for the client secret, and I'm going to copy that from a second screen and paste it over here. Edit, paste. Now the job is kicking off and we should end up in our breakpoint, which we do. Keep in mind, if you're debugging in a multi-threaded fashion, this gets very confusing. So because breakpoints will hit in different threads and this is hard to step through the code. So if you write timer jobs and you want to debug, just turn off threading temporarily while you're writing the job and debugging it. So I'm getting a job and what the job will grab the amount of admins I have. So in this case, I have two admins for my site, and it's actually, I do need two admins. So let's press F5 for now. I'm gonna first go to my site settings, and I'm gonna remove administrator, just to make the site incompliant. So I'm going to remove this guy over here. So now we have a site which has only one site administrator, which should be incompliant, right? And then we should see some actions triggered by the timer job by run. So I'm going to press F5 again. I'm going to paste my client's secret again. Here we go. We come into the breakpoint, hit F10, and we see that we have only one admin. So we're just wrong, because this is a bad guy that removed the second admin from the site collection, so we need to do something about that. Running over the code, when there is only one admin, we're going to show a warning message. And that warning message is delivered via JavaScript, via site-governance.js script. So at that point, we have to ensure that that script is in the site collection available. So here, this code will check.
Well, on Bert, on that one, you probably in real world, you wouldn't probably upload the JavaScript to the site assets, right? You would rather do a JavaScript hosted in whatever content delivery network.
I think that's definitely a better scalable solution because in this case, the timer job needs to have logic to update the script when needed. A central place would be an easier approach, yes. And the CDN is definitely a good place for that, yeah. Now, even though the CDN is think the way to go and to implement this kind of central script store, this timer job does have some logic. Because it will check, like, it has the state management, so it grabs the script file version from the state, which is stored in the web property back of the site. And in this case, it skips this complete block because it already knows, like, okay, script version 1.0 is already in the site assets library, no need anymore to upload it again. If you would evolve the timer job and the logic and you would have a new version, you would change the timer job and check, like, if it's equal to 2.0, then you come to your old site, it will see 1.0 and it will upload and overwrite the old script. So that's an example of how state management can help you. Now we come to the actual logic here. Is this admin counts is smaller than 2, which means we're gonna inject a JavaScript message via JavaScript, a warning message to the site. On here, and we're going to log the site compliant as false. So in state, we're going to define this site was not compliant. And this state will be automatically persisted in the web property back.
Moving on.
I'm going to press F5. All right, so the job finished. This is just one site collection, but imagine this running over thousands of site collections. If you now go back to our site and refresh, we hopefully should see some differences, and we do. We see this warning message that your site is not following company policy. You could then link to either to the page to add a second admin, or to an add-in showing more information, or, and so on. So up to you to imagine.
On that one, I'd start with say in the MSIT case, they do have that link, and then you click that one, it goes to the provider hosted application hosted in Microsoft Azure. We're able to then fix the situation. Wasn't that the case? Or
So in MSIT, we have different reasons why a site can be incompliant. So if it's incompliant, you can indeed easily navigate to a central SharePoint add-in that will show you all your, incompliances. And allows you to fix them from a central location. This is a very simple example showing you the concepts, and I hope that is clear. All right, I think that concludes this demo. Let's switch back to the slideshow. As a recap, The key message I want to give is that you timer jobs or background jobs are a key aspect of developing against SharePoint Online using the add-in model or against on-premises using the add-in model. It doesn't really matter that much which environment you choose, because there always will be scenarios, governance-related scenarios, maintenance-related scenarios, where these things are needed to realize the functionality. And if you
And
need
wouldn't
them.
actually just wouldn't the same thinking apply also non-SharePoint operations? Even obviously the BMP time framework is more for CSAM and it supports additional things, but
yeah,
the same kind of a remote approaching
that's nice
thinking.
out of the box thinking. You can definitely mix and match and other functionality as well, like the timer job that you write doesn't have to go to SharePoint. It can also do other things outside of SharePoint. It can go to a service running outside of SharePoint, doing things with it, whatever that you imagine can be part. Yeah. So you can have one job kind of spanning the functionality and not necessarily focusing on SharePoint alone.
True. And it could even use the service bus to connect to on-premises and get some information from on-premises and then update the sites within Office 365, as an example.
As well. I think it's very flexible because you have to develop it, so you can need to add all of those components in there. About developing, really recommend start from the TimeJob framework. It will take away a lot of the plumbing code that you otherwise would need to build on your own. It's well tested and used by a lot of people, used internally at Microsoft as well. So I think it's definitely a good way to start. With that, unless you have still have some questions, Vesa, I would like to wrap up.
I think it's time to wrap up. Yeah, I think a great session.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Vesa. And I'll talk
Thank
to you
you.
Soon. Bye-bye.